Latrobe to Elizabethtown, Everett to Bloomsburg. This is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania's activist Supreme Court has again gone rogue. 6 years after the congressional redistricting plan went into effect, they have declared it to be unconstitutional, throwing this year's congressional elections into disarray. David Taylor and Kevin Shivers are here for a Capitol Watch discussion. And the American left and the mainstream news media continue their brat fit over the election of Donald Trump. I'll have a town hall commentary on how to deal with their temper tantrum. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Already chaotic, the political scene in Pennsylvania got even more so this past week with a number of significant developments. Chief among them, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled the state's current congressional district boundaries to be unconstitutional. Our Capitol Watch crew will have more on that in just a couple of minutes. The court wrangling over congressional districts especially affects candidates seeking three open seats, but it will not affect a special election scheduled for March 13th in suburban Pittsburgh for the seat left vacant by the resignation of Congressman Tom Murphy, who became embroiled in scandal. Republican Rick Saccone and Democrat Connor Lamb are vying for that seat. Speaking of scandal, news broke that Congressman Pat Meehan, who represents a sprawling suburban Philadelphia district, used taxpayer money to settle a sexual harassment claim by a former staffer. Meehan denies any wrongdoing and says he will run for re-election. The game of musical chairs continues down ballot as two veteran state senators announced their retirements this past week. Senator Chuck McElhaney and Senator Stuart Greenleaf said they will not be seeking re-election. Both seats are in what had been solid Republican territory, but the Philadelphia suburbs have been trending Democratic in recent election cycles, putting both seats at risk for the GOP. Republicans, however, currently hold 34 of the 50 seats in the state Senate. A new poll conducted by the Commonwealth Foundation finds two-thirds of likely Pennsylvania voters support the establishment of education savings accounts. Such accounts are funded and supervised by the state, but are controlled by parents. This allows families to select those education services that best fits their family's needs. The poll by McLaughlin and Associates finds support for education savings accounts was solid across party lines and all demographic groups. Efforts are underway in the state legislature to allow for the establishment of such accounts. Efforts to get the state's opioid epidemic under control took a step forward in the state House this past week as legislation advanced that would require the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry to adopt an evidence-based drug formulary for the workers' compensation system. Such an administrative change would reduce the overprescribing of opioid painkillers and set up a formula for other drugs and the dosage considered appropriate for certain injuries. Read about these stories and more at patownhall.com. Pennsylvanians have elected the state's congressional delegation for three cycles under the current district map, but now the state Supreme Court has decided the districts are unconstitutional. With the official start of the campaign season just a couple of weeks away, nobody knows what congressional districts will look like. Here to cut through the mayhem unleashed by the court are David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Kevin Shivers from the National Federation of Independent Business. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. And with me here in the studio, my pal, Kevin Shivers, Executive State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Kevin, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be with you, David.
Well, you know, I there's something kind of alarming, kind of shocking that I need to share with the listeners. So for you folks who are listening to the sound of our voices, if you're driving, please pull over. If you're standing, please sit down, because we need to tell you this painful truth. Politics is political. I mean, I know.
Dear God.
That's shocking. But yes, politics is political. And there are some folks in Harrisburg who are shocked, horrified by that discovery. Now, the political branches of our government, anybody who ever took civics knows that the political branches are the legislative that are elected by the people, the executive elected by the people, and then the judicial branch, which is supposed to not be political, that they are merely to be the referee in the great challenge of representative self-government. Well, in Pennsylvania, we elect our judges, which makes them even more political than they should be, which is not at all. But now with the current configuration, the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court has committed something of a power grab. And Kevin, you want to clue people in on what we're talking about?
Yeah, sure. If the listeners at home been reading the papers, watching on television, our state Supreme Court just recently tossed out our congressional district map, citing undue partisan influences in drawing the map back in 2000. It was a map that actually has been in effect since 2011. We need to redraw the map again in 2021. So just, 4 short years from now. But in its place, they have issued some demands on the legislative and executive branches, which are really, I think, going to be insurmountable.
Right. They're standards that can't be met. They're challenging the other branches to an impossible thing. And it's very much like having a gun to one's head that the state Supreme Court has ruled that the map violates Pennsylvania's state constitution, even though it was duly passed by the General Assembly, signed by the governor, and was reviewed and approved by the Supreme Court at that time. And even though we've been through three cycles under the current map, that now the state high court says it's going to throw it out.
And because it was too political.
Right. And again, as I said at the outset, politics is political. There's no getting around it.
Every piece of legislation that passes our General Assembly and is signed or vetoed by the governor is done so for a political reason. It's inherently political.
Yes. And that this has gone on in every other state in the country. And so that to the extent that this is distasteful, and it is, it's not uniquely so to modern day Pennsylvania.
Here's the place, though, that I think our listeners should be concerned, because the court came out with a series of demands in its decision to toss these congressional maps. And they said, look, these maps are too political, that we want the legislature. We're going to give the legislature until February 9th, which is what, two, three weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to give them. We're going to give you until February 9th to pass redraw all 18 of these congressional districts, and then we're going to give the governor until the 15th of February to sign it. And if that does not happen, then we, the court, are going to go in and we're going to draw the lines.
Yes, the court is seizing the authority.
And that's really what they're doing, David, because, you know, the legislature, controlled by Republicans in the House and the Senate, the governor, a Democrat, there is no reason, incentive, why this governor would even sign a plan that would come out of a Republican legislature. So ultimately, the court is very likely going to be drawing these lines. And the question then becomes, how do you do that? I mean, if the court then—
By what authority?
Yeah, I mean, we literally have just days before the petition filing period starts for our congressional elections. We have a May primary, and so candidates need to start circulating petitions and getting signatures.
And there are candidates and incumbents who have for months been declared, have had campaigns organized, have been doing the work necessary to build a successful effort. And this threatens to overturn
all
of that.
The cost associated with, you know, these changes. I mean, there's going to be an impact to taxpayers, you know, with elections. There's going to be confusion, you know, among the voters who, you know, have no idea whose district they're now going to be in.
And obviously, you know, there are no tax dollars to waste. But I mean, the cost is nominal compared with the direct threat to our system of, you know, constitutional representative self-government, to have one of the branches claiming and asserting powers that it does not have.
That's exactly right. I mean, under our state constitution, it is the authority of the General Assembly to come up and draw these lines. And what's even more fascinating is we're not even talking about state legislative lines. We are talking about federal congressional districts. And so this court is, you know, really asserting itself in a way it never has done before.
The president pro tempore of the Senate, Joe Scarnati from Jefferson County, and the Speaker of the House, Mike Terzai from Allegheny County, that they have appealed this, and that they have appealed to the federal courts to have the federal courts issue an injunction.
Well, they're going through a process. They actually first filed this appeal with the state Supreme Court, effectively asking them, we need you to stay your opinion.
Which they're not
going to
do.
Which they're not going to do.
Right.
And
that's
then,
pro forma.
You know, there'll
mm-hmm.
be a process by which, you know, the pro tem and the speaker will, you know, make an appeal to the federal courts as well.
And I would think with other cases on this matter of political mapping moving in the federal courts, that the U.S. Supreme Court would expedite this. The justice who's responsible for overseeing the Third Circuit, which is Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, is in fact Justice Alito. So Justice Alito could issue an injunction to prevent this this action by the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court from going into effect, because it would hinder the ability of the people of Pennsylvania to know who their congressional candidates
but
are.
But, you know, for the listeners at home, you know, who are asking themselves, I mean, why do we care about, you know, the fact that the courts are ordering redrawing of congressional lines? Why does that matter? And who cares that it's an overreach into somebody else's playground? Here's why it matters, because this is now becoming a pattern with our state Supreme Court, that we have seen on numerous occasions now this judicial overreach by our state Supreme Court into areas that the Constitution grants the power to our legislative and executive branches. In effect, the courts have now weighed in and have used their authority to take away the legislature's ability to budget.
And that these are rights that that under the Constitution of 68 have been in place for – the Constitution's been in place for almost half a century, and all of a sudden – this new newly composed Pennsylvania Supreme Court discovers rights and powers that that had never been seen before. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Kevin Shivers from Pennsylvania NFIB. So, I mean, Kevin, you're absolutely right. The pattern that we see here is disturbing. And I do want to note for the record that the seven-member Supreme Court of Pennsylvania is composed of five Democrats and two Republicans. But the redistricting case, where the high court is seizing these powers and asserting itself in unconstitutional ways, in my opinion, that was a 4-3 decision, and actually that Justice Max Baer, who was a Democrat, was among the dissenters who said, "Hey, wait a minute, you know, you can't do this. The Constitution doesn't allow us to do it."
Yeah, I mean, and he argued about the confusion of doing it now. I mean, it would have been one thing had this case reversed back in 2011 or 2012. But, you know, we're now 6 years on with these maps. We're literally to the point, because this process starts with the census that takes place every 10 years. Mm-hmm. So the next
under the
census
US
under the U.S. Constitution mm-hmm. will be ordered for the year 2020. And so based on the way that the population and the people move around the state, the lines will be withdrawn and we'll come up with new maps. Here's something that really does disturb me though, David. Everybody's worried about the partisanship that's going along into the redistricting. What really troubles me from where where I sit is that in the last 50 years, Pennsylvania's lost 9 congressional seats.
Mm-hmm.
Every 10 years, we've lost 1 or 2 or 3 seats because population is moving to other places. So in effect, the people that really are redrawing our congressional lines are down in Texas, where
Florida,
all of those,
yeah.
Where all of the population is moving and, they're watching, they're actually seeing an increase in the number of congressional representatives we have. That really, in my mind, should be something that everybody is worried about, or why are people leaving the state?
Well, and it speaks to the fact that lawsuit abuse is part of competitiveness. It's a major part of the ability of Pennsylvania businesses to succeed and to prosper and to create jobs and wages and benefits and pensions and, yep. and opportunity for citizens. And people go where the jobs are. So
that's exactly right. We've talked about this on several shows. And this is why, the judicial activism that we're seeing from our state's Supreme Court is so concerning. There actually is research that shows that if you reduce junk lawsuits and you create a better litigation climate in a state, you're actually going to increase your employment by about 1.5%. So you think about that in a state like Pennsylvania, where you have 5 million employees, and just a 1.5% increase in employment, that's a lot of people getting work. And
mm-hmm.
in a state where we have our unemployment rate is still higher than the national average, but it's still it's pretty good comparatively speaking. But 1.5% increase in jobs is a pretty cool thing. The problem is that this pattern, it's, again, not just with this decision with the with congressional redistricting. It's not just this decision with our environmental rights amendment. There have been several cases where they are, redrawing the lines, or, literally and figuratively in the legal books, creating a climate where this is a great place, our state of Pennsylvania, to file a lawsuit. The American Tort Reform Association has actually put Pennsylvania Supreme Court on a watch list of national courts all across
for its
the
country. Worst designation.
The worst designations. And these are courts that are of real concern for people who look at this. And so I posit this from the standpoint of, here we are, a state. We still have 2 areas of our state that are, in the running for, the Amazon headquarters.
The second headquarters, yeah.
The question then becomes, what is a place, where are they going to want to locate? And certainly, we have here in Pennsylvania great, we have a location.
Access to market.
Great workers,
mm-hmm.
Nice communities. But, when you're contending with, horrible litigation climate, when you're contending with high taxes and regulation, when you're contending with a dysfunctional political climate, if you're a company like Amazon, why on earth would you want to locate in a state like Pennsylvania?
And that's the point bears repeating. We live in a world where talent and capital is more mobile than it has ever been, and that Pennsylvania has to earn private sector investment, in the sense that we need to make it the smart business decision for people to choose to invest and hire and operate and grow here versus someplace else. And yes, that the cost of frivolous litigation and expanded liability at every turn, that just in the same way that having, taxes that are too high, driven by state government spending that's growing too fast, compounded by, overly burdensome regulations, having a bad legal climate is one of those key competitive factors. And other states have done a much better job of addressing that particular liability.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's another organization out there, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that tracks economic performance. And, you take a look at our neighboring states, because, you take a look at the states in your general vicinity, but then you also take a look at the real, the states that are really performing well. And, states like New York and New Jersey, always at the bottom of the list. And, what's really disturbing is, you take a look at an activist judiciary that we're worried about here in Pennsylvania, just over the border in New Jersey, there is a state that, year after year, the paralysis in their budgeting, because in that state, their activist court has ruled that, a good education is a constitutional right in that state of New Jersey, very similar to us. But now the judges are weighing in terms of funding for different schools.
Right. They're taking direct control over the administration of the school system.
And that becomes a real problem because that is not the responsibility.
It's dictatorial.
Of the judicial branch of government. And there are three branches, as we've been talking about.
Well, it bears repeating that it's not good enough for Pennsylvania to just be not quite as bad as New York and New Jersey.
That's right.
We've got to benchmark Pennsylvania against the high-performing states. And when you look at nearby states like Indiana and North Carolina, they have taken some of these reforms that we have been advocating and put them into effect, and you see the benefit. And that's why those kinds of states are thriving and why they have growing population and why they're going to be gaining seats in the U.S. House of Representatives as we're losing them.
Well, and remains to be seen. At this point, appeals have been filed in this latest episode with our courts and our congressional district. We'll keep listeners informed over the next weeks and possibly months as to what happens with this decision. The reality is, though, the congressional representative you have today may not be the one you have next year. And, if you're in office now, you may not be running in a district that you thought you lived in or that you thought you represented. So there's a lot of confusion. A lot of unnecessary work here at the right before the starting gun goes off in this election season.
Well, and again, the only thing that's changed, since the congressional map was duly approved by the General Assembly, signed by the governor, reviewed by the courts, and I think it's also worth noting that that the legislative leaders of all four caucuses were part of those negotiations, and that the Pennsylvania Democratic Party did not sue the to overturn the map. The only thing that's changed since then is the composition of the state Supreme Court. So, the ruling may be based on being against politics, but of course, all of those things are political. Anyway, we'll have to leave it there for now. Kevin, thanks for being with me. Where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you're doing?
Sure. They can visit NFIB.com or they can join the conversation on Twitter at @NFIB_PA.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Kevin and me, thanks to you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. In one of the most prolonged brat fits in history by an out-of-the-mainstream ideological movement, the American left continues to act like a small child whose favorite toy has been snatched away from it over its loss of power at the national and state levels. And like children, when there is no reasonable argument to employ, they resort to name-calling. And so, if anyone espouses ideas or policy positions with which they disagree, the go-to tactic is to brand that person with a pejorative. Thus, we are subjected to a daily barrage of words from left-wing activists and their apologists in the mainstream news media like hateful, racist, or intolerant. Here in Penn's Woods, the elected official who is especially adept at driving the left nuts is State Representative Daryl Metcalf. The fact that Metcalf not only doesn't retreat in the face of left-wing attacks, but actually seems to enjoy them, really causes liberal heads to explode. The most recent example is Metcalf's calling out of Governor Tom Wolf for circumventing the legislative process and changing centuries of precedent, listing mothers as mothers and fathers as fathers on birth certificates. By executive fiat, he declared all to be simply parents. For his efforts, Metcalf was denounced as hateful by left-wing activists and newspaper editorialists who castigated his alleged intolerance, this while themselves exhibiting extreme intolerance. Claiming mothers and fathers should be called parents supposedly is more fair to same-sex couples. Although gay men can be fathers and gay women can be mothers either through natural conception or by adoption, calling a gay man a father or a gay woman a mother is not homophobic. It simply reflects the central role that person is playing in raising a child. The king of poking at the left sensibilities is, of course, the man who took away their favorite toy, President Donald Trump. He of the itchy Twitter finger also seems to relish poking the liberal bear, and his enjoyment at watching their reaction only intensifies the brat fit. All of this serves to remind us that words matter. Conservatives have not been able to master the art of wordcraft since Ronald Reagan left office. The left is proficient, and Donald Trump's skill at turning a phrase has proven to be more than their equal. The fact is that policy debates and even political contests can be won or lost depending on how they are branded. The Affordable Health Care Act is a wonderful example. How can anybody be against affordable health care? The problem is the Affordable Health Care Act has unleashed historic spikes in health insurance costs. Likewise, call illegal aliens dreamers, and the public is sympathetic. Sometimes popular nicknames for complicated policy matters actually clarify the situation. In the Reagan era, explaining the complexities of nuclear defense strategy in a Cold War environment was a difficult task. But when the Gipper wanted to develop space-based first-strike defense capabilities, the proposal was dubbed Star Wars, and instantly the entire nation knew what he meant. The fact is, most people are busy with their daily lives and don't have either the time or inclination to spend hours reading policy papers and parsing the nuances of healthcare reform, immigration, or the federal budget. That is why how the debate is branded matters. What legislation is called immediately frames the discussion. The recent shutdown of the federal government lasted less than 3 days because the alliterative title Schumer Shutdown succeeded in placing the blame on obstructionist Democrats and represented a rare rhetorical victory for Republicans. And while Donald Trump's bestowing of nicknames are often, shall we say, a bit unpresidential, they do produce the desired result. The bottom line for conservatives is we need to get more adept at framing the debate. And when dealing with the left, let me offer another childhood analogy. Since their actual debating skills rarely rise above the level of a kindergarten playground, recall the old rhyme, "Sticks and stones may break my bones"? Don't apologize for taking a principled stand. Don't give in to the name-calling. Don't back down. When invectives are hurled your way, reject the name, challenge the name-caller, defend your position. Like the playground bully, their facade of strength will crumble when you fight back. With the Town Hall Commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WJSM-FM in Martinsburg, WJUN-AM in Mexico, along with WQZA-FM in Myersdale, Pennsylvania. And it's time to begin talking about the 2018 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier conservative event held each year here in the Keystone State. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Fox News contributor Byron York. The conference will also feature debates by candidates for U.S. Senator and Governor. This year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held April 6th and 7th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. For complete information and to register, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville. All of them have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.